Welcome to episode 13 of our first ever adventure through the Star Wars universe. My name is Mary Clay. If that's too complicated for you, just call me MC, and I know nothing about Star Wars, but that's slowly been changing. Today, we're continuing our discussion of the Phantom Menace. Joining me are the hosts of Star Wars English class, Julia and Fern. Welcome!
Hello! Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I love talking about this weird movie.
I'm so excited to have y'all on. Yeah. Can you guys tell me what it is that you guys do on your show? Because it's such a interesting, and that's the unfortunate part about my position where I am is that I can't consume any of the content that my guests create. But I'm so fascinated by this premise of what it is that y'all do.
Star Wars English class does what it says on the tin for the most part. Fern and I are both educators. I'm a PhD candidate in English. And so we'll hopefully someday be a professor, but you know, the job market is what it is. But point being, I teach English and I love Star Wars, and during a live chat in a different podcast live stream, was talking about connections to the tragic hero and Fern. We were getting to know each other as friends at that time, and it was hey, we think there's an idea here. So Fern is also an educator. So we just
I teach high school English, and you know, I'm now in a position where I have a little bit more control over the texts I choose in my classroom. But at the time when this podcast was first starting, I was very much teaching a set curriculum and thinking about how wonderful it would be if I could bring in the texts that I wanted to bring into the classroom. So we had the idea for this show where we used Star Wars essentially as a text that we would study in the classroom and use it as a sort of avenue into different literary ideas. And so that's what we do. Yeah, we talk about Star Wars and the tragic hero, or reading Star Wars as camp. And it's a lot of fun.
And you can't listen to any of the episodes.
No,
we have no we have not been able, we don't keep it. It's a but yeah, so we're hopefully starting, we've taken kind of a hiatus, hopefully starting season 3 in April. So
Oh, that's great. Will actually probably be perfectly timed, because this episode will come out sometime early or mid-April. So
wonderful.
Listeners, make sure to go check that out. So, this was my first viewing. This was my first time experiencing The Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have memories of the first time you watched it?
I don't remember the first time I watched it, but we had it on VHS and it was my first Star Wars movie, and I should have grabbed, I also have the DK books, the visual guide to The Phantom Menace, the big, it has all the equipment and characters and descriptions, it's an encyclopedia. So I had that, and I had the VHS, and I watched that, and also the year it came out, I was 5 or 6 years old. So Halloween that year was just
everybody
was dressed up.
I was just thinking, because I just rewatched this segment right before we sat down, so that it would be fresh in my mind. And I was just thinking, man, there were probably so many little boys that in Halloween 1999 or 2000 that were wearing the Anakin helmet,
the pod racing helmet,
costume, yeah.
Absolutely. It was just everywhere. And it was I know other people have said so, Justin Jordan, who you had on your A New Hope episode, your first one, talked about his love for the prequels, even though they're probably not the best movies, but it's just the nostalgia of this film in particular.
Yeah.
Means I have a fondness for it, even though I know it's certainly has some choices were made.
Yeah, I don't remember my first time watching this movie. It's something that it just exists in my memory of it was always on. My dad and brother really liked Star Wars before I got into it. So I just remember the VHSs sort of being played on repeat in my household. But I do remember when I started getting into Star Wars myself, I would check out all the Star Wars books the library had to offer. And one of them was the concept was that it was Padme's diary, essentially. It was her journal, and it recounts the events of The Phantom Menace from her perspective. And I remember the first time I watched that movie after reading that book, how it was a completely different viewing experience. Yeah. Like, I seem so much more aware of like the characters and the narrative itself than I had ever been in the past, where it had been something that was just sort of on in the background. So that's what I think of when I try and imagine like the first time I watched the movie.
Yeah, and even just like watching this back the second time after you learn that Padme is the queen, adds like a whole fresh spin. And like, especially in this section, there are so many like where she's like, you think that the queen doesn't know what's going on.
I have a question for you as a first watcher. There's kind of people like to argue at what point Qui-Gon maybe like suspected, because some of the lines he says about like, well, the queen doesn't need to know, wink. Like, did you ever get a sense that he knew, or did you think he was like oblivious the whole time?
I think he was, I think at by this point, I think he's still very oblivious, because he's very, he's very like sure of himself and is like, well, the queen has full confidence in me. So, and then she says like, you assume too much.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I think he is very sure of himself and like so focused on the mission. And like, it also would just be so, it's like not a new story or a new spin to be like, this man is so focused on his mission that he doesn't even notice, like he can't even take like a close look at this woman in front of him, you know? And like, he writes her off as just like a handmaiden, you know?
Right.
Like, I think at this point he does not know. But I will kind of like keep that in mind and pay attention with the rest of this and see like, does he like have a moment where he realizes or maybe like changes his attitude towards her.
Yeah. We're, as Star Wars fans, are a little bit unhinged in that like we'll look at like a character's like facial expression in a scene and be like, so actually what's happening here? And then like argue about it, and then they'll like write a short story and people will be like, I was right about the facial expression 20 years later. So I'm sure you've gotten a sense of that already.
Yes, but absolutely.
Just,
You're so right. So this part of the movie, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are using their like walkie-talkies, and Obi-Wan is like, well, we don't really have anything, there's not really anything on the ship that would help us in this situation except for like, other than the queen's wardrobe. And I'm like, you could sell one of her outfits and that money would feed a village. Like,
I like to imagine the handmaids are like guarding it with their lives. They're like, we gotta,
absolutely not. We draw the line here. You can't even sell like one of her headpieces. Absolutely not. It would ruin the whole plan. She has a schedule that she has to follow with the outfits that she's in. Absolutely not. Qui-Gon's like, okay, well, I guess we'll figure it out. Something will happen. So they start walking back to the ship, and on the way, Jar Jar gets in like a silly situation where this creature, I don't know like what species he is, his name is Sebulba, and he like turns on him, and now like Jar Jar and Sebulba have beef. But Anakin comes in, and this is such a funny scenario, because Jar Jar is like 7 feet tall, you know? Like, and Sebulba is like a fourth of his size. So if Jar Jar, and I think that's actually a really endearing part of about him, is that like, he doesn't have like a vicious bone in his body that like, he doesn't even think about like fighting back against this creature that's like, I'm gonna turn you into, or what does Anakin say? He says like orange pulp or something like that. Orange goo, I don't know.
Sometimes they speak in Huttese, and I don't always like, they use a lot of like poodoo or like the words in a different language, so I don't remember a lot of times what they're saying.
I fully have transitioned to watching everything with captions on. So although I have noticed that sometimes they'll translate it and sometimes they won't, it'll just be like cursing in Huttese, which I guess is also like Disney doesn't want to write out like you or whatever it is, you know. And yeah, and then like, again, it's also funny because now this 8-year-old or 9-year-old is coming in and saving this 7-foot tall.
I was thinking about that, because Anakin comes up and he's like, oh, you better be careful. Like, he's an important off-worlder. And clearly not so important that he's capable of defending himself, though. He does need a 9-year-old to come and do it for him. So I don't know. But like, the threat seems to work. Zabola backs off and seems very defensive. Like, he has beef with Anakin in a way that doesn't... I can't quite wrap my head around.
Yeah, imagining having beef with a 9-year-old.
Right? Like, what's the story there? I'm sure there is one, but I don't know.
You're a professional NASCAR driver and your biggest enemy
is... And a child rolls up.
Yes! Yes! Yeah, you're a professional NASCAR driver and, like, you're mad that this kid is really good at Mario Kart. Like... So, Anakin intervenes and is like, you better watch your back. Zabulba is like the big shot around here. And then a sandstorm comes in and Anakin's like, oh, well, you're not going to make it back to your ship in time. You can come back. You can come home with me.
Is this the kid that like got bullied out of the industry? He's honestly, he's not bad. He's just a kid actor.
He takes them to his house and he walks in and he goes like, Mom, I'm home. These are my friends, which is so cute, but also so funny. Like, imagine like you send your child off to work for, you know, child labor and slave labor that day. And he comes home and he's like, these are my friends. And it's a Jedi, a Gungan, a droid, and then this like very pretty woman who like we don't know is the queen, but is the queen of another planet.
Yeah. Probably not what Shmi was expecting to happen that day, but
Yeah, there's so much out of her control, and she's just like, my child is like, he has his own way of doing things, and clearly, like, his life is out of my control. So I'm just gonna try my best.
Sometimes I think about Shmi Skywalker, and I just like, I just sit and like, sit. Like, she's just such a. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, the lack of control that she feels over her son's life, this, like, sense of, like, even the way he came into being. Like, he just exists and now has this destiny. And, absolutely.
I thought the phrasing is interesting. It's a little bit later, but the phrasing of when she's explaining to Qui-Gon.
Oh, it's so insane.
That,
we'll definitely talk about
that. We'll have to dig into that,
It's so cute. Anakin's like, oh my God, let me show you my droid. I'm building a droid, which is just so cute of like a kid, the equivalent of like walking in and a kid is like, oh my God, did you see my Lego set? let me show you my Lego set that I'm building.
My sentient Lego set.
Oh my God.
It's like, come check out what I built in Minecraft.
It's C-3PO, which is so, and it's so silly because at first I was like, and I had this. I had the same reaction earlier when like R2 is introduced where I was like, oh, well, that's not our same R2-D2. Like, surely that's just like another, you know, version of this droid. Mm-hmm. That's just another. And my friends were like, no, like that is our R2. And I was like, what? And then I had like the same reaction here at first where I was like, surely there's not, this isn't the same C-3PO. But it is. Oh my God, I love them.
C-3PO!
They're the best. They have so much pathos. Like, they're just the heart is
Which is so, I think that says so much about how well they construct that, like, a lot of heart and soul of these movies comes from two robots. Like, that's so incredible. And so but he's not like in his final form yet. He doesn't have an outer shell. And Anakin turns him on, and then R2 and him meet, and it's like, oh my God, you guys don't know what you are gonna become. you know, the start of a friendship.
Oh, excited beeping! Chirping, bleeping.
R2's like, you're naked. And he's like, oh my, my pants are showing.
Yeah.
Love it.
I just remembered, and I don't remember. I think on the DVD for The Phantom Menace, there was like some, you know, extra bonus content. And one of the pieces of bonus content was like, R2 and 3PO talking over the movie like a talk back, like they're the directors. and I just remember that scene, you know, I think this is the case. They're arguing over whether or not C-3PO was actually naked the first time they met. But he is. His parts are showing.
His parts are showing. So embarrassing.
Ugh.
over on the ship, the team, I just keep saying like the team, whatever. It's Obi-Wan and the fake queen at this point, Keira Knightley mm-hmm. queen. And they've received a message, one of these like hologram messages, seemingly from Senator Palpatine saying like, we need your help. People are dying. And then it kind of like fizzles out and they're like, I order you not to respond. This is a trick. Mm-hmm. And so they're pretty confident this is a trick. I believe this is one of many times that so Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan do like a lot of these walkie-talkie conversations, and Qui-Gon will just like end them so ominously and cryptically where he doesn't say like okay over and out or like all right we'll catch up later. And so Obi-Wan is saying, but what if it is true that their people are dying? And Qui-Gon goes like, well, either way we don't have much of a plan. And then like that's how he ends it.
Like that doesn't help Qui-Gon. Yeah. That doesn't answer Obi-Wan's question.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah.
It is very much the nature of their relationship.
Yes,
though,
yeah.
Yeah.
Just be like, well, and then I just wanted like cut to Obi-Wan on the other side being like, hello? Hello? I just said people are potentially dying.
And then and you Qui-Gon said like come see, come sa, and then hung up. So I don't know what you expect me to do about that.
So they're all sitting down to dinner now and talking about kind of like their way of life, and like we're learning more about their lives as slaves, or we're learning more about life on Tatooine and what it's like. Slaves have some kind of chip implanted in them mm-hmm. and they don't know where it is, and if they run off they like get blown up, which is so dark. But also I wonder if like this idea of like, oh, you have a chip implanted in you somewhere, I wonder if that's just like a psychological trick that like they tell the slaves so that they don't run off, or if it's like actual legitimate, like you know, a real thing.
I mean, that's not the type of thing you risk, right? Like
That is true.
Like
yeah,
you're like, especially like Shmi as a parent, like what is you're not gonna put your child
test
in danger
it.
Either.
Be like, hey, like, just let's
just see what happens.
Like, yeah, no. I have a theory. Yeah. And then they start talking about pod racing, and because they're like, oh, how are we going to get these parts? What are we going to do? And Anakin says like, oh, I love pod racing. I'm the only human who can pod race. Mm-hmm. And Qui-Gon is very impressed. And he says, well, then you must have Jedi like reflexes to do that in order to react that quickly. And then like, immediately afterwards, Jar Jar like sticks out his tongue like a frog to like eat another piece of fruit, and Qui-Gon grabs his tongue. And I know that's not earlier. Anakin did also see his lightsaber on his like belt.
Sure.
But like just like that moment combined with like literally Qui-Gon was just talking about fast reflexes. And so Anakin goes, you're a Jedi, aren't you? And he says that he had a dream that he was a Jedi and that he freed all the slaves. And he's like, are you here to free us? And he's like, well, no, actually.
Yeah. There are some scenes in this film that like you're just pointing out things that are so like, Fern and I like to talk about how like craft is kind of like, if it works, it works. Like rules are kind of guidelines, and like you can make really anything work. But like, that's such a great example you pointed out of like writing in Jedi reflexes and then showing us immediately afterward what that looks like. Like there, you know, like George sometimes will be like, I do in fact
know
how to
write a
movie,
actually. Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting like when those moments appear that like, no, there's a lot of thought and care put into this, in terms of there's a lot of individual scenes that I think really shine, and this one around the dinner table I've always felt like is a highlight to me, I guess, in some ways. So
do you guys feel like, because I still feel like I don't really know the extent to which Qui-Gon is self-aware. It is a mystery to me.
just in general?
Yes, honestly. Okay. But in that moment, do you think that he is intentionally demonstrating this ability? No, I don't want to say as like a test for Anakin, but like if he is sort of putting feelers out there, trying to get a sense of what Anakin has picked up on.
Maybe.
Or do you think that it's just this like comedic moment of, yes, and he is one such Jedi who has these reflexes and this is what it looks like? What do you guys think?
That's a really good point. And I don't think you're wrong there. I do think part of it is also that he was annoyed with Jar Jar and was like, stop that. That's gross and rude.
Spraying the cat off of the table.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But that's, because he is kind of like, he says every now and then, like, there's something about this boy, which, like, in any other concept is, in any other situation, is so weird for a grown man to say about an 8-year-old boy. but yeah, there might be some truth to that.
As a character, I'm sure I'll cover this more throughout the rest of kind of discussing the movie. People have a lot of mixed opinions about him and like his intentions. And this section, I think we'll get into some of the things he does where it's like, you know, there's a lot to wonder about what he's thinking. Like you said, self-aware, like what he's doing purposefully, what he's thinking ahead about.
Qui-Gon is... he's like, okay, I can tell you're a smart kid, 8-year-old boy. I'm going to tell you the truth, which is that we're on this important mission to the Republic capital, but our ship is broken and we're stranded here. And that's why we need these parts. They start talking about like, oh, well, maybe like we can do something with Watto and the pod racing and like making a bet. And at first, what's the mom's name?
Shmi. It's S-H-M-I. Shmi. Okay.
So like the sidekick from Peter Pan.
Yeah, basically. But with a shish.
With a shm. Okay. So Shmi is like, I don't want to put you in danger. I don't agree to this at all. And they're like, okay, yeah, that's totally fair to not want to put your son in like a life-threatening situation. Absolutely. And then Anakin kind of like wins her over and says like, well, you always say that no one wants to help each other, and here we are with an opportunity to help people. And so she's like, you're right, okay, let's do this. So they come up with a plan that they're going to say that the pod racer that Anakin has built is Qui-Gon's, and he wants Anakin to be the driver in the race, which is in like 2 days. So they go into the shop the next day to talk to Watto. And then this is where like we have this like first little kind of like bickering between Qui-Gon and Padme, where she says like, the queen will not like the, like, I don't think the queen would appreciate us putting all of our eggs in this 8-year-old boy's basket. And he says, like, well, what the queen doesn't know won't hurt her. And then she's like, mm-hmm, sure. And so the plan is that I had to, like, really pay attention to, like, all of the, like, agreements and, like, wagering and bets that happened to be like, okay, so what happened? What's the plan? So originally they say they're going to use the ship as the entry fee into the race. And if they win, then, you know, they'll use the cash prize to buy the parts. Watto, though, is like, well, you're using my, you know, worker, using my slave. So what they end up doing is Watto fronts the cash for the race. They're going to split the winnings 50-50 if they win. And then if they lose, he's going to get the ship. So they move forward with this plan, and Anakin works on getting the pod racer up to speed. Oh, there's this really, there's this just like cute moment where like clearly he was like directed to do this, where Anakin, like Watto says something. I don't remember what he says, but Anakin like crosses his arms and like looks really grumpy.
Like he doesn't quite make it. I think about this all the time because I don't know if you're familiar with the YouTube channel Drunk Disney, but they did a drunk Star Wars special where they watched this movie, and they point out that he doesn't quite cross his arms all the way on the first try. So he goes back for it and crosses his arms again, and that was the take they went with. And they're sort of making fun of it in that episode, but I think that's adorable. That's such a little kid thing to do, to be like, no, I'm grumpy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't quite make it the first time, but I assure you, I'm very grumpy.
Yeah. Qui-Gon and, oh, this is another instance where they have, where Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon have another like cryptic walkie-talkie moment, and Qui-Gon's like, Obi-Wan's like, are you sure about this? And Qui-Gon's like, there's something about this boy. And then he hangs up. Like, okay. Say more.
In like, hello? If we could talk about this, like, unpack it. No?
Yeah. Okay. What do you mean?
Poor Obi-Wan.
So this is when Shmi comes over and they have this conversation about how special Anakin is. And Qui-Gon says he has like the reflexes of a Jedi because that's how he is so good at pod racing, and that's how he appears to have these quick reflexes, is that he sees things before they happen. I have to say, they don't really show any of that until we get to the pod racing. Up until this point, it's a lot of like, I have fast reflexes, and they don't really do anything to show that. Like, it would have been helpful or nice if there were like a couple and like, it's very easy to like insert that where like they're in the shop and like Jar Jar knocks into something and then like Anakin reaches out and catches it, you know, or like at dinner, you know, he catches something that's about to get knocked over, like that kind of a thing. So it's a lot of like telling, not showing at this point.
That's the duality of George, baby. He can write one scene where he's like, see, and then we did it. And then he'll write another scene where he's like, figure it, you know, just figure it trust out. Me on this one.
Just believe me. And he says that, like, it's a shame that he's grown up in these circumstances, because in other circumstances, we would have noticed this earlier and he would be training as a Jedi and he would be living a very different life. And so Shmi's like obviously upset about these circumstances that her son is in and that she can't do anything about it. And this is when Qui-Gon asks about the baby daddy. And she says, like, there is no father. And apparently Anakin was immaculate conception.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, well, girl, that's not how it works.
Immaculate conception? Get
it? What do you mean you get... Girl,
it's,
you know.
It's canon that it's an immaculate.
It's an immaculate.
No, it's canon that that fish lies.
Which I think is an insane choice. It's so insane and I just think it's dumb. I just like so vastly disagree with this decision. And like, granted, maybe this is a concept that is like delved into in other works or in future movies, but like, it's this insane thing that she drops and then they just move past it. Mm-hmm. Like, Qui-Gon's like, oh, yeah, sure. Immaculate conception, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's being used as what is the word I want to use here? Like a signal to us that there is something special about this boy. Mm, yeah. And, you know, we're being led into the sort of, there's something unique about him. There's something different about him. We're being led into the like chosen one territory here. I don't know, Julia, do you have thoughts on this? I feel like you do.
I mean, I do, but a lot of them are locked behind the spoiler gate. Yeah. So just in the context of this film, I will say that there's quite a bit in The Phantom Menace that is simply dropped on you. And you're just kind of like, okay. Like in, you know, the original trilogy, there's the scene where Luke and Obi-Wan are talking, and there's all this stuff that is referenced that seems to be... But it seems to be a similar type of thing where they're trying to reference these big important ideas, but the way they're dropped on the audience is kind of just like very, so very casual. Jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Because like, you know, what we were discussing earlier, that we are told more than we're shown about Anakin's ability, like that characterizes Qui-Gon in an interesting way, that he's so willing to buy in and that he has like immediate faith in what Anakin is saying. And I think this is supposed to be the first like signpost almost for us that like, yeah, Qui-Gon is on the right track here. There is something significant. There is something special about this boy. But it is, it's delivered in such a casual way. It's immediately, you know, they drop the subject immediately. And we are asked as an audience to just like buy in immediately. Which I think, like, understandably, people struggle to do. People want more answers than that.
Yeah. Also, it's weird for Qui-Gon to ask that. Can I just say?
Yeah. Can I ask about the father? Yeah.
This
like
is something else. I don't know.
To anyone listening, that's not generally an appropriate question to ask someone that like you've known for a day. So like, if you ever meet someone and they are like clearly a single parent, don't ask them, where's the father? Don't do that.
It's not an appropriate question.
A weird thing to ask.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're supposed to believe that he's gathering information of some kind. Like, is this... I have to imagine the thought process is like, was the father a former Jedi? Like, is this someone, you know, Qui-Gon knew? Yeah. But not... Nevertheless, not an appropriate question to ask. Yeah.
Also, like... God bless me, because speaking as a single woman who currently does not want to have children, if I just like spontaneously became pregnant, let's just say it's a good thing I didn't become pregnant. I didn't conceive Anakin, because Anakin would not exist.
Yeah.
I would have gotten that fixed, you know? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I would not have given birth to him.
But right. This was the section I was mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
Her delivery is so interesting there. Yeah. Of like, I can't explain how it happened. Like, I, you know.
She's just like, I carried him.
I birthed him. I
don't know.
Him.
Yeah.
There is such a lack of agency there. Like, she delivers that line as if she is like a passive participant.
Yeah, it's something that happened to her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and like you were saying about her characterization earlier, Mary Clay, of like the lack of control, it is great characterization. It's just like heartbreaking characterization.
Yeah.
Like,
it is tragic. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really sad. So, and like it gets sadder like in the next section too. Yeah. So Anakin is working on the Podracer. All the like little local children run over, and this is where like they use like iMovie like children's laughter sound effect.
Oh my god!
But like I love all these little neighborhood kids. It's so cute. There's like one little kid who's some kind of alien, and I love like we haven't seen any like kid aliens yet, I don't think. And so like it's very cute, and also like it's very wholesome to see like all these different kids growing up together and like becoming friends, and you know what, that being said though, some of them kind of give Anakin a hard time, and they're like, this piece of junk, like Anakin, I don't think you're gonna do this, like you're never gonna win. And then they all kind of run away, and there's one kid who I think his name is like Kidster.
Or
he's a cutie too. He has some faith in Anakin. They clearly appear to be friends, good friends. So this is like a long drawn out scene of like Jar Jar being Jar Jar while Anakin's working on this shit on the pod racer. C-3PO and R2 are like, I think he's quite an odd person, don't you think? And like Jar Jar gets his head caught in like the beam, and like his tongue goes numb, and then like his hand gets caught in like the motor. And I had like the instinctive kind of like in a horror movie when someone sticks their hand down the disposal, when you're like, oh no, something bad's about to happen. And I was like, oh my god, like he's gonna turn on the pod racer and like his hand's gonna get chopped off or something. Thank god that doesn't happen. Padme comes over and like very patiently, calmly helps him and gets the hand out of the pod racer. And then they turn it on, and it's such a funny scene. They clearly have like so like on the set, they have like all the powerful fans blowing in this little boy's face. And he's going, it's working! It's working! I love it. I think it's great. People who bullied this child relentlessly are just so awful. And you know what? I think he's great for what it is.
I agree completely. I think he does such a good job of portraying a little kid. Like, Anakin is believably 9 years old. He's, and I will say, like, I think the scene with all the little neighborhood kids, you could very easily make the argument that that scene could have been cut. But I love that we see that Anakin does have a life on Tatooine.
Yeah.
Like his work and his racing and his mother, that like he's part of a community here. There's more he's leaving behind. Like I thought that was, I like that. Like it adds just some color to like his life.
Definitely. Yeah. As like a thought experiment people like to do is at one point, like, well, what if Steven Spielberg had directed this movie? Because he's such an excellent director with children.
Yeah.
And George and Steven are friends. And there's, like, I don't know if it's actually true that he maybe wanted him to direct at one point. But, like, I think it's a good example of like George's like strengths as a director. I wouldn't say that actresses is one of them, and especially a child is, you know, I think he definitely, in terms of casting, there's a sort of innate spunk and like heart to his character that he was going to be able to portray. But yeah, George is not like giving in-depth notes to actors on like how to perform, right? So I think all of that considered, he does what he needs to do in the film, in my opinion. So
yeah, we were talking about, my guest and I on the previous episode were talking about that as well, that like Jake Lloyd very easily could have given like a really excellent performance as a child actor had there been like a different director working with him. And like I'm thinking about like Chris Columbus, who directed the first two Harry Potter movies, and like they notoriously talk about like all the behind the scenes stuff of those movies, of like how good he was working with kids. And Steven Spielberg. It just goes to show that like there are like super famous great directors that like if they don't, they all have like certain talents and certain strengths, and that like sometimes you need a certain type of director. And that like especially with kids, like who this is, you know, their first time doing something like this, you know. So that's it's definitely like unfortunate, and like who knows like what kind of movie we would have gotten if Steven Spielberg or, you know, another director who has like a reputation for working with kids, what that movie would have turned out to be. So that night, Qui-Gon is cleaning. There's like a scratch that just like randomly appears on Anakin's arm, and Qui-Gon is cleaning it up, and he like puts it in a vial, and Anakin is like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm just testing for infection." And like, again, this is another thing that like if like in any other situation, it would be so weird to be like, "I'm just taking this little boy's blood. Don't worry."
Yeah, issues of informed consent here for sure.
And he's just like, "Okay." So he inserts this blood sample into his little walkie-talkie thing.
Is Jedi something that shows up in DNA?
Whoa.
That's insane.
And it uploads to the computer on the ship, and Obi-Wan says that the midi-chlorian levels are like off the charts, even higher than that of Yoda. And so this introduces a new concept that I have since learned was very controversial. And like literally the moment that it was happening, I was like, this seems stupid. That they're like, I was like, is the Force in his DNA? And I said that jokingly. And my friends were like, yes, it is. And I was like, that is so ridiculous.
Yeah. The section we watched is like two of the most controversial decisions in Star Wars history, like Immaculate Conception Anakin and also midichlorians.
Yeah.
Like it's just. Yeah, not a popular decision, because something that was like magical and vague is now
scientifical.
Yeah.
I don't like that there's now, it's like, oh, well, we have like physical proof that there's something up with this kid, rather than just like, oh, it's the Force, like it's strong with him. Like it definitely feels kind of like a moment of like telling, not showing, where it's like, oh, we're gonna tell you that his blood is special, rather than like setting up a plot where Anakin can continuously show off like what it is that makes him special, or what it is that like sets him apart. And now it's just like, okay, I guess we can do testing. And then it's like, okay, well, why was there a reason that like we never saw Luke do any kind of like you know, midi-chlorine testing in the original trilogy? So it's definitely like a weird choice. This is the one time their conversation doesn't end ominous. I mean, like, he just kind of trails off, but he at least keeps the walkie up, and then the scene changes. So at least then it implies that, like, they might have continued the conversation or something. Mm-hmm. So that's, like, the one time that, like, it doesn't end weird. Then the next day, or maybe even later that night, we see that Darth Maul is landing on Tatooine. I forgot to mention there was an earlier scene, it was very brief, where he and Lord Sidious are talking about how they are ready to reveal themselves to the Jedi, and they're like, we will have our revenge. message. And Lord Sidious says that he has, like, complete faith and trust in Darth Maul. Mm-hmm. And so he lands, and then he sends out these, like, flying little droid balls to, I guess, like, survey the area or look for the Jedi. And we'll, like, kind of check in with them later. And then it's the morning of the race. And everyone is in the, I don't know, I guess, like, whatever, cargo bay, whatever, like, all the ships yeah. are, you know, getting ready. Watto reveals that Sebulba is, he's like, oh, well, my money's on Sebulba. And even though Anakin, and, like, he does praise Anakin very mm-hmm. highly. He's like, he's really great. Like, there's no denying it. But, like, Sebulba always wins. And Qui-Gon says, I'll take that bet. He says, if we win, you can keep my pod racer. And if, wait, no. If we lose, you can keep the pod racer. And if we win, I want Anakin and his mother. And he says, a pod racer is not worth two slaves. And he says, okay, well, how about the boy? And so Watto says, we'll roll for it. And so he takes out a piece of dice and says, red, it's the mother, blue, the boy. And Qui-Gon uses the force to land it, like, blue side up.
I'm sure it'll be totally random and up to fate, and nothing will influence it.
How dare you ever imply that Jedi Master Qui-Gon would cheat in a game of dice?
And Watto's very angry with these results, kind of, like, storms off. And then, yeah, everyone arrives to get going on the race. During this part, R2 has clearly been recounting, like, their journey so far to C-3PO because C-3PO's like, oh my, that sounds terrible. You'll never get me on one of those starships.
Yeah. I do appreciate that they're like, what if we just have them be in the movies again? They're like, what if, you know what? What if they're just there again?
They're great.
I love them so much. And so this is where we learn that actually Anakin has never won a race. Actually, he's never finished a race, I think, mm-hmm. is what it is.
Yeah.
Because, like, he all, like, his ships always end up blowing up or, you know, something like that. And Padme's like, are you kidding me? And there's a really cute moment where Kitster and Anakin, like, put their arms around each other. And Kitster's like, don't worry, Anakin's got it in the bag. And I'm like, I love this kid. Like, he's great. Like, he's just so, he has such faith in his friend. Mm-hmm. I love it so much. And they're such, like, they're also just, like, such typical boys that they're like, we're not worried about it. And Padme's like, oh my God.
You should know.
So then the race is beginning. All of the racers are lining up. Everyone's kind of, like, working on their pod racers. We get poop joke number 3 of the movie.
Again? Are you kidding me?
Where, like, a camel being of some kind farts. And mm-hmm. Jar Jar, all of the poop jokes are with Jar Jar, too. Mm-hmm. And Jar Jar says, like, Piusa, I think is what he says.
Oh, no.
And I'm just like,
oh, boy.
I just think it was just, like, such a decision to put multiple fart and poop jokes into these movies when we didn't need them before. We didn't need them before. And then we entered the 90s. And then, like, I mean, like, at this time, they were actively making the film Shrek, which is, like, is so much, you know, like, it was just the humor of the time. And mm-hmm. I'm mad that they gave into it. Anyway, for the listeners wondering, yes, I am going to bring up every single mention of a poop or fart joke in these films.
We need to hold them accountable.
Yes, they need to answer for their crimes. Sebulba, during all of he, like, sabotages Anakin's pod racer and, like, pulls, like, a lever or something loose. And Qui-Gon, when they're getting ready to go, says, like, don't think, which is, like, maybe let's think a little bit. But what he says, like, trust your instincts, go with your gut, like, you got this. And then he says, may the force be with you. Just a quick note that all of the racers have someone carrying their flags out. C-3PO is carrying Anakin's flag. It's so cute. I love
it. Can I just say, my favorite line in the movie is when the announcer says about Anakin, a local boy. Yes,
it's a local
it's
boy.
It, every time I'm like, that's oh, I love that.
I'm
so,
so
much.
Glad you brought there that up. Yes. also, the announcer character is super cool. It's a two-headed person. And one side speaks in Huttese and one side speaks in English. And I like that. That's like a cool little extra like bit of like world building that like it would be very like it's very believable that like a local race like this would have people who like only speak the local, you know, like the local language, you know. So I like that little just like added bit. And of course, like it's also like it's a little bit fun, you know. Qui-Gon and everyone, they like go up to like the box where Padme and Jar Jar and his mom are all sitting and watching, and they're like, is he nervous? And he's and Qui-Gon's like, no, he'll be great. And Padme says, like, I still don't think the queen would approve of this. And then this is when Qui-Gon says, the queen has full confidence in me. And she says, you assume too much. Damn girl. And like it's kind of said like under her breath, which is why I think that he isn't being like wink wink nudge nudge.
Sure.
I feel like if he knew and if she knew that he knew, she would have like said it to his face to be like, no, like I'm rapidly losing my confidence in you. But she kind of like says it like behind his back and like under her breath. Oh, and then they pull up like an iPad device to watch the race on, which I don't understand how they're watching it. Because, like, when we watch NASCAR, we're watching it on our TVs with, like, a camera that is, like, zoomed out over the whole race. And, like, I don't understand how they end up getting to what, like, I don't understand what point of view they're watching from. It's just, like, magically they're watching the race when it goes, like, out into the rest of the course. And so then the race begins, and it's so insane to me that like this entire section that y'all have been on for is just like is like centered around pod racing and that like they like completely almost derail this movie for pod racing.
Yeah.
And like there were probably other ways to be like, oh, Anakin is a special boy. He has the Force, but he's a slave. How are we going to... Like, there were probably other ways that they could have gone about doing this.
I was going to say, I love how they were like, what if NASCAR, but in space? Oh my God.
And they just instead went on this entire, like, side plot. Not even, like, a subplot. A completely, like, almost unrelated plot. We're going to have Mario Kart and Formula One racing in this movie.
It definitely feels like, to me at least, it feels like they're, I don't know, like they're on the line Obi-Wan delivers to Luke in A New Hope of like, you know, when I first met your father, he was already an accomplished pilot. It's like they needed to validate that.
They needed to show that, yeah.
Yes. And so the way they were going to validate that was through this extended pod racing sequence. And it sure is long.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's and like the race itself, like, it's very fun, but it's kind of like, this isn't what the plot of the movie is.
Yeah. You definitely, like, there have been times where I've watched this movie and by the end of the pod racing sequence, you think, okay, yeah, they won. Like, they won. Did it.
The movie's they over.
It's over now, right? Oh, no, there's still a lot more
that
plot
was just
left.
Kicking oh. off, like, you know, like the second act of the movie.
Yeah.
It's and like I will say though that like they don't, this isn't necessarily like a new thing because in Empire Strikes Back and in Return of the Jedi, particularly like at the beginnings of those films, there are these like long sequences and like side plots where it's like, we didn't need to spend 20 minutes with like Luke being rescued from the, I forget what it is, from the monster thing. The, what is it? It's like a Yaba or a...
He's basically a Yeti. I don't know what the actual creature.
The Yeti thing, yeah. Like he gets attacked by the Yeti and that adds like a 15 minute plot line to the movie. And then everything with Jabba's palace in the beginning of Return of the Jedi adds that is a 37 minute sequence of,
what do you
just
mean,
like,
Luke's plan was flawless. it made perfect sense. Of everything course.
everything worked.
And like, all, no, it was just an excuse.
All of that was just
that
to get Han back. And yes. It's like, could we not have like somehow worked that into the existing plot of this movie of like, okay, we need to, you know, destroy Darth Vader and the Death Star again. Like, could we not? So it's kind of like keeping it, it tracks with the history of this franchise. Yes.
This is why people when new Star Wars content comes out and people complain about the pacing, I just have so little patience for that, because none of us have ever been here for the pacing. Yeah. None of us have ever been here because this is the most immaculately structured, like Freitagian, you know, plot arc we've ever seen. There are these detours and these deviations. And like, for me, it's part of the charm. I understand that it's probably not everyone's cup of tea. And I also understand that it's ridiculous sometimes, and we spend 11 minutes pod racing when you really don't need to spend 11 minutes doing that. But
it could have been one lap.
It could have just been one lap. When I was in college, my friends and I don't know if I should, I'm a teacher, should I be saying this publicly? But I will. We were like, well, let's do, like, wouldn't it be so funny to play a drinking game where for each minute of the pod race, you take a drink or you take a shot? And we quickly realized
11 shots
you can't.
In 11 minutes.
Yeah. No, we gave up long before that.
Oh,
by
man.
Minute
yeah.
three, we were like, this was a mistake.
Yeah.
No, that's okay.
I will say, though, I don't know why it hasn't occurred to me before to play drinking games with these movies. And you just made it so much more fun.
Yes. It's pretty fun.
So, yeah. Yeah, the race begins. Anakin has some trouble with his pod, and there's another racer too that has trouble getting his pod going, which I think like kind of validates that it's like it's not just Anakin who's having trouble. Mm-hmm. And throughout this whole race too, we see tons of people crashing into things, blowing up, like ships completely falling apart. So like, it's not to say that like, oh, Anakin is like, it's like amateur hour over here and everyone else is like a professional. Clearly, this is like a very like complex form of racing that like even the other racers also have trouble with it. So obviously, like, that makes it all the more skillful and impressive that like Anakin wins it, you know. So he eventually gets it going up and going. And he has to like spends like the first two laps basically catching up. There's a lot of instances where like it cuts back to the group watching the iPad. And honestly, they could have just reused the same shot and I probably wouldn't even have noticed of just like Shmi like shaking her head like super worriedly, or like she's like looks away because she's like super stressed out. But throughout the race, I won't like, you know, do a blow by blow. This is just the part of the movie that's like, it's just cool racing, you know, like the sound effects are, I think the sound effects are so cool and super impressive and like really unique, like something that I like hadn't heard before. Mm-hmm. I think the design of the pod racers is really unique and cool, that like it's like a cockpit and then there are these like two like engine things that are kind of like floating in front of it that power it and pull the cockpits, rather than like a car or like a spacecraft or something. It's like all these parts, and it really gives this impression of like a lot of these people probably like found these parts separately and built it together. So it is like a really cool, fun concept. There are a lot of moments throughout the race where, again, like I said, we see lots of people crashing into things. We see them blowing up. We see lots of other racers like sabotaging each other. Sebulba, like straight up, he like throws something into someone's engine, like, which is like, how is that legal? But I guess it's whatever.
Oh, yeah. I can see how maybe this isn't a great environment for an 8-year-old.
There's a moment where one of the pod racers pulls over for a pit stop and then his droid gets sucked into the turbine. He's okay. The droid's okay. But that racer is out of the race then. And then there are lots of moments where we see Anakin, he like gets into some kind of trouble where like, oh, this piece flew off of the ship. And then he like uses this magnet thing to attach it again. He gets like flown off into like space at one point. And like, so we see a lot of him using those piloting skills. We see that like he knows from our point of view, he's just pressing buttons and flicking switches. And like, I wonder if they just told Jake Lloyd, like, just go crazy. Just like, do whatever you want. Just press buttons, but make it look like you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so like, we see that like, he knows what he's doing. He knows his way around this machine. He's like skilled and that he's, you know, trusting his instincts. Yeah. Eventually he wins the race.
Yay.
Real quick, I should bring up that Warwick Davis is like a random crowd member with Watto in a couple shots.
Oh, it's Warwick Davis!
Yay. And I was like, oh, cool, Warwick Davis is in this movie. It's just that. I don't think he might be like in costumes, in other costumes that like we don't physically see him, but like that's all you see of Warwick Davis. Yep. Also, when all of like his... When Anakin's friends are like celebrating and everything, there's a really cute moment where it looks like Kidster is going to give the alien kid like a high five, but then maybe like the alien actor, the person in the suit, like didn't see it or like didn't know how to. And then like it looks like they're gonna go hug, and then like that doesn't happen. It's just like it's very like awkward and funny and cute. Mm. And so, yeah, Anakin wins. And everyone, of course, comes out. Qui-Gon, like, scoops him up on his shoulder. And they celebrate. And Anakin goes like, Mom, I won! And, yeah, that's the end of the race. And that's where we'll end our conversation today, too.
And then the movie ends.
And that's it.
And then that's it. That's actually... That's the end of The Phantom Menace. the Mario Kart level. I'm trying to think if there's some kind of crossover between the companies involved with, you know, Disney and Nintendo. If Mario Kart were to ever come out with like a Mario Kart level of like pod racing, I know that there have to be pod racing video games. But like a Tatooine pod racing level of Mario Kart would be so fun.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a video game, a computer game. Was it on PlayStation? What was
it on? I
think
it was a PlayStation 1 game.
But you can get it on the Switch. I do have it on the Switch. So it's $4. Yeah. I recommend it. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm absolutely doing that. Yeah. I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so cool and fun. Do you guys I know I kind of like I like sped through like the part of the race, but were there any moments that like you guys wanted to bring up or mention from the race?
There's so much that happens that we get no explanation for. Like, they get shot at a bunch.
There's like a couple moments where like, I forget what they're called. They're like the short little creatures that talk like the
Jawas. Yeah.
That's it. The Jawas. They're like spectating. And then there's Tusken Raiders who were just out there shooting at them. And my friends and I were just like, oh, it's just like the rednecks that live out in like rural county of Tatooine, and they're like, hey, I'm bored today, you want to go shoot at some racers? And it's like, yeah, let's go.
They didn't want the track to be built through their backyard, but what if they
through their land? Yeah.
Now? Yeah,
that's a great point.
Yeah.
It is so fun. I guess it's just to like once again point out like the hazards of this race, that like you can get shot at and killed. You know, you won't necessarily die from the pod racing, you might die from like the raiders shooting at you.
Yep.
And also it's said by the announcer in such like a, oh, here they are again.
Not again. This happens every year, guys.
I think I said when we first hopped into the call that this is like the most fun part of the movie. Mm-hmm. Definitely like the first half is like, it's a lot of the politics of like, oh, the taxation and the Trade Federation and like all this other stuff, and like getting things going. And then from here on out, it's like, okay, we're back to like serious war business.
Yeah.
And so this part definitely is just kind of like the outlier of like, we're just here. Watch
it's a sports
NASCAR.
Anime.
Yeah.
They do a sports anime in the middle of the Star Wars movie.
Yes. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. This was great. Yeah. Where can people follow you and find you on the internet?
I am currently not able to be found on the internet. I'm taking an extended hiatus from social media.
That is so valid.
We are going to be kicking off season 3 of Star Wars English Class soon. So that will be where pods are cast. But other than that, I am hiding and writing my dissertation. So that's what I've been up to.
And I can be found on TikTok and Twitter at AlwaysFern, all one word, and Star Wars English Class, wherever pods are cast.
Awesome. Well, before you can win the pod race, you gotta skywalk before you run. Skywalk Before You Run is hosted and edited by me, Mary Clay Watt. The cover art and music is by Jason Hilton. Follow the podcast on Instagram and Threads at Skywalk Before You Run. Follow me on TikTok and Twitch at MCWhatsUp and on Instagram at MCTurnDownForWhat. Go to patreon.com/talkingaboutpod to become a supporter of this podcast, join the Deus Ex Media Discord server, and gain access to bonus material. This podcast is a proud member of the Deus Ex Media Network.